Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome, everybody, to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we bring you education and information that will help you take your next step in building wealth through real estate. My name is Chris Seveny, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Lauren Wells, and Jim Pfeiffer, who is one of the founders of Left Field Investors and the host of the Past Investing from Left Field podcast. For those that don't know Jim, he is a former financial advisor who became frustrated with the one-path-fits-all approach of standard financial services industry and now concentrates on investing in real estate assets that produce cash flow and committed to sharing his knowledge with others who are interested in learning a different way to grow your wealth. So it sounds very similar to what we like to preach as well. So Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes. And Lauren, good to see you again.
Yeah, great to be here again. Chris, that was a beautiful intro. Why don't you tell us a little bit more? Chris mentioned you were a previous financial advisor. So can you talk a little bit about how you got into that and then what led to your exit and where you are today?
Yeah, sure. So I'm kind of on career number 4. Financial advisor was number 3. So I'll kind of jump to the beginning real quick just so you get a sense of it. Right out of college, I was a finance major. I was always interested in finance, the stock market, mutual funds, making money. And I worked for a reinsurance company for about 11 years. And I had an education role as soon as I could in there where I was mentoring people and teaching. And so I found over the years that education is my passion, which leads to my second career, which was as a high school finance and accounting teacher. That's what I always wanted to do, but teachers don't make much money. So I went and made some money first and became a teacher and was teaching in Columbus City, teaching life skills. And while I was doing that, I figured, well, I was struggling teaching kids because they're not super excited about learning. So I thought, well, maybe I'll be a financial advisor and then I can teach adults about money. And I found out that was even harder than teaching kids, teaching adults. While I was kind of going, transitioning from being a teacher to a financial advisor, it was about 2008, and we had a third child and we needed more space. So we built a house. It was 2008, so we couldn't sell our old house because the market was just horrible. So we rented it out and I was an accidental landlord. I did that for about 5 years and absolutely hated it because you get the calls on Christmas morning to come fix the bathtub or something. I don't know how to fix anything. So it was just a disaster. So after the market corrected, I went to my realtor and I said, I want to sell this property. I don't want anything to do with this. And he said, how about you buy 2 more and I'll manage all 3? Because I'd had that house paid off. He said, get a loan on it. We'll buy 3 more and I'll manage them for you. And I said, okay.
That's a different approach.
Yeah. It changed my life, right? Because it changed my whole perspective. Here I had a house that was paid off, which is bad economic move, bad financial move. Your home equity always earns 0%. And he said, let's take that equity out and buy more. And then he managed them. And those were the best rentals I ever had because I built quite a portfolio. At the same time, I was transitioning, as I said, into being a financial advisor. So I was learning all about money. I thought I knew everything about money, but financial advising, they taught me again. And the funny thing is, the more they taught me about paper assets, while I was starting my real estate journey, I started putting 2 and 2 together. And I found that paper assets is not what I wanted to do. I wanted real assets to boost cash flow. I went more and more into real estate. And finally, I've transitioned to full-time active investor because I took pride in investing in what my clients did as a financial advisor. And as I matured and learned and found out that real estate was the place to go, I couldn't recommend anything to my clients that I was doing. I couldn't recommend real estate because I'm not licensed for it. Also, I wasn't incentivized because I don't get paid for it. So I was doing one thing and my clients were doing another, and that was very uncomfortable for me. So I ended up getting out of financial advising. And at that time, I was also transitioning from active to passive. And active because I was not a very good asset manager. At a time, I had 10 or 12 single family homes. I had a 22-unit multifamily, an 8-unit, and a 4-unit. And I was a horrible asset manager. None of those properties cash flowed like they should have. But fortunately, I was rescued by the market. The market kept going up, up, up. And so I sold all those for pretty large profits. And what I did with all of the capital was I went full-time as a passive investor in real estate syndications. I didn't pay any tax on my gains because I invested in syndications that gave me depreciation benefits, bonus depreciation, and I ended up eliminating, deferring all of my tax and went full-time passive. And that's what I've been doing since then.
Wow.
I've got like 4,000 questions, but I'm like, I'll let you go first.
Well, I just thought, and I didn't want to interrupt you when you started, but you talked about educating kids was hard, adults was harder. You then mentioned was how paying off your house is not economically smart. And that I think is just such a common misconception that people are like, oh, once I pay off my house, then I won't have any debt. It's great. We had a whole episode on how not all debt is created equal. Not all debt is bad. But I thought it was interesting that you brought that up about that was like, I should have been leveraging that equity.
Yeah.
And that's what got you into the rentals.
Right. And I really thought I knew what I was doing financially. It was just such a comfort not to have a mortgage. For an investor, the point of a loan or a mortgage leverage is so that you can use capital elsewhere and get into more deals. And as long as you do it smartly, I mean, I've told people when I was a financial advisor, the same thing, don't pay off your house. And I would tell people, look, just whatever you were going to pay off your house, just build up that cash, invest it in something. And then if you ever get nervous, you can't sleep at night because you're just so upset that you have a mortgage, then you can go pay it off if you just slowly invest and build that cash up. So sometimes people make the wrong financial decision because it helps them sleep at night. And that's okay. So if you're a person who needs your house paid off because that's the only way you sleep, as long as you recognize that's not the best financial move, so you understand what you're doing, then I think it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it. Like not having a mortgage, that sounds awesome. So yes. I can get why a lot of people think that. And I, until probably 7 years ago, thought the same thing. I was like, okay, how can we pay this off as quick as possible?
I think where people run into that challenge is if they pay it off and they go to use that equity, they're using it to, oh, we're going to go on a nice vacation. We're going to go buy cars. We're going to go do this. They're buying depreciating assets. They're not investing it. They're blowing it essentially. So that's where.
Right.
So you went into teaching and then you went into financial advising and then became a passive investor.
Yeah. And that's where I started Left Field Investors. And that's why I was talking about education at the beginning, because that's what Left Field Investors does now is we help people get into and understand that passive real estate investing through syndications is accessible to anyone. It's like this mystery, these alternative assets, this super scary thing. And it's not. What we try to do is just kind of introduce people. And we have people that are non-accredited trying to get into their first deal who are part of our community. And we have people who are accredited and in 100 deals. And we all share information. People are always looking for who's the best sponsor. Of course, that's a huge topic of conversation in our community. But what I tell people really is, if you're going to be a successful passive investor in real estate syndications, you need a community. It does not have to be Left Field Investors, but you need people to talk to. Because Lauren, as we talked about briefly before we jumped on here, is if you walk out your front door and you're talking finance with the neighbors, it's going to be 401k, IRA, what mortgage rate did you get on your interest rate did you get on your mortgage? And then you come out and say, well, what about real estate syndications? And all of a sudden, crickets, everyone's looking at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, or take it a step further and be like, hey, what if you had a self-directed IRA that you could invest in real estate? And they're just like, never mind.
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like that's the conversation I have a lot today. And I'm like, no, but it's a great move. What are you doing? I just sound like a crazy person. So I thought I saw that quote about walking out your door and talking to your neighbor. And I was like, wow, that really resonates. If people come to you and Left Field Investors, say they're not part of Left Field Investors, where do people get started finding this community of like-minded, I would say, individuals? Because passive investing is different from, like you mentioned, buy a rental property and become a landlord. Very different types of people, outcomes, goals. How do you find people that want to invest passively?
Well, that's the thing. You said it, right? I invested in turnkey single family homes when I was an active investor. And if you would have asked me then what I was doing, I would have said I'm passively investing in real estate. And it was not passive. I was buried in spreadsheets, fighting with my property manager all the time. It was not passive at all. Now I understand what passive is. I do a bunch of work up front to qualify the sponsor, vet the deal and all that. But as soon as I send my money, I'm done. Now I'm just sitting there waiting for reports and distributions, right? That's passive investing. And so I think the first thing is to get the definition straight. But as far as where people come to us from everywhere, it's curious people who want to build wealth so they can become financially independent. So you can have a W-2 optional or no W-2. That's really the goal. So to find those like-minded people, A lot of them come from bigger pockets or where they think they're doing turnkey that's passive and it's not, or they've been in real estate, but now they just don't want to have to deal with tenants and all that. So they come from everywhere, but it's people that want to do something different and recognize that you can invest in real estate, legally not pay taxes, and make more money than you do investing in paper assets.
Yeah. So sorry, Chris, I have so many questions.
Keep it going. I'll just mute myself.
Yeah. I think for me, this is like so interesting because do you find that people that come to you a certain like demographic, age range, stage in life? Because for me, what I find is when we're talking about investing, people think, oh, I want to manage properties. I want to fix and flip. I want to wholesale, that active investment that they think is passive because it's so glorified and the returns are so big. And when you look at passive investing, if you don't have a big chunk to start with, it can take a bit longer to get to where you want to be. So I think for people maybe my age, it's a slower burn.
There's other ways to do it because like you said, you need money to do it. You can't go and wholesale a deal. You can't do seller financing or these creative things to get into a passive real estate syndication, right? What you need is cash. You do need money. So it's not good for someone just starting out who says, I don't have money. How do I get started in real estate? Go to bigger pockets because they'll help you there. But there are other ways too. So for younger people, we use a company called TribeVest. And basically, they help you invest as a group. So you can get five people together, 10 people together, and invest together in a syndication. Mm-hmm. So maybe the minimum is $50,000. Well, if you get 10 people together, now the minimum is $5,000 for you. You can get into more deals, you diversify. And one of the best parts is now you've created a small community of your own. So when you bring a deal to that group, you're going to have to defend it, explain it, and answer questions about it. So guess what happens? Because you're teaching, you learn. So most of our group are W-2. A lot of them are high earners, so they can get in multiple syndications. But we also have quite a few people who are getting into one or two deals a year using TribeVest and just investing smaller amounts. And what they're doing is they're learning and preparing once their incomes start rising, once they get that snowball growing, because that's what happens. This thing snowballs into something larger. Then they're ready to maybe do a deal on their own every year. And then maybe five deals on their own. So it's a growth pattern. But you can start with very little if you set yourself up right.
Do you think that that's like an expectations thing? It's like having the right expectations when you're going into it and knowing just as much as people glorify, oh, I did a fix and flip and made 50K overnight. You can also lose that. It's a bigger risk and there's risk with everything. But I do feel like there's the, with syndications and passive investing, if I don't have 200K to throw at something, then is it worth it? Does it make sense? Can I put that somewhere else?
That's a great point. And the way I look at it, I'm in a tribe through TribeVest that has 10 people in it. And it's kind of what I call a training tribe, right? They're people who want to learn what is syndications? How does it work? We invest in one deal a year. The minimum is $25,000. So we put in $25,000 total once a year. So far, we're in two deals and they both pay, I think, an 8% pref. We're collecting $166 a month times two. So $333 on $50,000 invested divided by 10. So if you're an investor, you're looking at that, oh, great, I'm earning $33 a month. That's nothing. What you're doing is you're starting the snowball. Right now, it's $33 a month. A year from now, it could be $66. And then you have a deal go full cycle and boom, your capital is reloaded because that's, you know, you can expect it to maybe 1.7, 2.0, double maybe in 5 or 7 years. It is a slow start and you have to be ready for that, but it builds. What you're not going to have, let's say you're putting the same amount into a 401k and today it's worth 50 grand and tomorrow it's worth 25. That's not going to happen to your real estate. There's a difference there. And I think you do have to be patient if you're starting out small and you'd have to persevere and you will see that after a few years, you'll be shocked by the extra income streams that are coming into you.
It's interesting because you mentioned that there's a lot of the bigger pockets crowd that wants to get rich quick and understand the play and kind of real estate investing. The analogy that popped in my head when you were talking about it is kind of like having a baby. It's awesome, but it is an awful lot of work and it's more work than you could ever have anticipated. Yes. But it's also nonstop. It is 24/7. And if you want to own real estate, that's what it is. And you can't take weeks off at a time or whatever the case may be, unless you have a partner. And that's where I think people try it and then they get frustrated and get out of it because they're not making money. They didn't do research ahead of time. And they end up getting crushed. And I'm curious to ask you this question. You owned rentals and so forth, and now you're in syndications. I'm guessing you probably do just as good investing in syndications as you did with your other investments, but also you're just doing that upfront work. You're not spending all that time. And if you actually took and paid yourself that time, you're probably doing much better on the syndications. I'm curious.
You're absolutely right. And just to continue your analogy, if investing in active real estate is like having a baby, passive investing is like being the fun uncle who shows up, gives the kids a bunch of candy, and then takes off. So you're just there for the good stuff. And that's the returns that are coming in. On your analogy, that's how I'd look at it. My results now are better because you know what I'm doing? I'm hiring a professional asset manager to manage the asset for me. I'm not having some Yahoo, me, manage the asset anymore because I didn't know what I was doing. It's the same thing now. When I need legal documents done, I don't hire myself. I hire an attorney. When I need my taxes done, I hire a CPA. When I want to invest in real estate, I hire a professional asset manager who does that full time because I've proven to myself that I don't know what I'm doing managing an asset. And it's a struggle. And like you said, it's full time. It's nonstop. Even when I have a property manager, I was constantly fighting with the property manager, telling them to do this, do that. They wouldn't do it. It was horrible. And the returns, even if the pro forma had come out and I'd gotten the cash flows that I expected, I'm doing better with having a professional asset manager manage my assets. The only way I think that you can be an active investor and beat the returns of a syndication are if you have some kind of skill or knowledge that gives you a competitive advantage. You know a market better than anyone else. You know how to do something better than anyone else, and or you do it full time. A lot of people are trying to do this part time and not have a competitive advantage, not have a skill, and it doesn't work out. That's why I went completely passive. The results are better than they were when I was doing it on my own.
We do a lot in the note space, and we have our new fund and offering, and people, oh, I just want to go buy a performing note. Some of them I'll talk to and say, I see what you're looking to buy, and you can basically get a better after-tax return investing in note funds than you could be buying some of those assets that you're looking at. And oh, by the way, you're going to have to do the work. I'm not even including like the software, your time, and all the other costs that you're going to spend. If it's something you want to get into and be very active in it, that's perfectly fine. Go do it. But a lot of people, like you mentioned, are on that W-2 side and they want to dip their toe into it. And I think you want to get the feel, the rush of accomplishing it and do it on your own, which is what I had absolutely 100%. And I just kept chomping at the bit at it. But a lot of people, like you mentioned, they don't have that competitive advantage. And it's real estate's a very difficult skill set, just like any other type of profession that, yes, you learn by doing. But I think a lot of people think they can learn by doing over the course of like 3 to 6 months, or even the people who've invested in the last 3 years. Now, I joke, anybody could have made money the last 3 years in real estate. Literally, you bought a house property 3 years ago. If you did not make money, I can't find anybody. I probably didn't make money in real estate the last 3 years. Now, the next 3 years, let's see what happens then.
Yeah, I completely agree with that because I say that all the time. I made money just because the market went crazy. But we're going to find out in the next few years which operators, and just syndications I'm talking about, they've all made money too. So we're going to find out pretty soon if we picked the right sponsors because there's going to be some trouble. And there's a lot of inexperienced people out there that are running syndications that we're going to find out if they know what they're doing or not.
So kind of on that note, with left field investors, when you guys are looking at sponsors and doing your due diligence, what are some things that are red flags to you?
That's the thing that everyone wants to know when they join a group like ours. How do we find quality sponsors? And the things that I look for is I prefer someone to be experienced and have been through a down cycle, but that's not a requirement because that's hard to find. Most syndicators are recent to this because this wasn't really a thing before they changed the 2012 Jobs Act. There aren't a whole lot of syndicators who have down cycle experience, so you can't rely on that. But I'm doing two things to find my sponsors. One is I require that they be excellent communicators because if they aren't going to reply to an email in a timely fashion before I've wired them $100,000, there is no chance they're going to do that after they have my money. And these are long-term, illiquid deals that are completely out of your control. So the only thing you have after you send that wire is monthly or quarterly reports sent to you by the sponsor and hopefully some distributions of cash. That's the only way you can tell how the deal is going. I want to make sure that the sponsor is going to be proactively communicating and that when I send them an email, they will respond and it will be a quality response. So that's number one. It sounds trivial, but I've been in deals where I haven't been communicated to. And even if the results were great, I'm not investing again because I'm sitting there for 3 years wondering what's happening. why aren't my emails being answered? So that's one. The way I first started finding sponsors was I went to my first seminar and I had a self-directed IRA burning a hole in my pocket. And I just met people and I said, you're a syndicator? Here's the money. Oh, you're a syndicator? Here's the money. Okay. Not a real good approach. I did not vet them. I didn't analyze the deal. I did nothing because I didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to take action and see what happened. That didn't work out. Some deals did, some were not as good. Then I moved to phase two, where I started listening to podcasts and reading books. And that's how I found sponsors. And that was better. But still, I don't know if these sponsors are great marketers, great podcasters, or are they great operators? Are they both, or are they neither? I don't know. And so a 30-minute conversation doesn't tell you much. The way I find sponsors now is I only invest with a new operator if they are referred to me by someone I know, like, and trust in my community who has already invested with them. Now, it doesn't have to be full cycle, but just invested with them. They sent a wire and they know it was received and they've started maybe getting some distributions, because what that does is trust transfers. If they trust the person and I trust them, then at least I'm still going to do all the same due diligence, but I'm starting so much farther ahead, having that base of trust, knowing that this is a legit operator. I know those aren't exactly red flags, but communication is key. Track record obviously is great. And then how you find the sponsor, I think, is really the most important thing. And we've really changed how we do that to where we're only working with operators that we meet from others that we know, like, and trust. Now, if an operator comes into our circle that we've never met and no one knows, that doesn't mean we're just going to ignore them. It just means it's a long process. It'll take 6 months or a year before we'll really dig into a deal, because we want to get to know you first. And it's weird. It is a relationship business. It really is, because I'm taking $50,000 of my hard-earned capital and I'm just sending it through the ether, hoping you get it, hope you do what's right with it and send me more back later. There's a huge element of trust. So having a strong relationship makes a difference, because then I feel comfortable. I can call you up and say, hey, what happened with this deal? Or if the deal is going the wrong direction, you're going to feel comfortable enough with me to call me up and tell me why, or email. So that's kind of how I look at finding sponsors.
And it's interesting you mentioned about communication, because Lauren runs our investor relations side. And when people call her and she answers the phone, they're like, oh, I actually get to speak to a person.
I think last week my phone rang and I'd be like, hi, this is Lauren. And they're like, wait, is this not a robot? I'm like, no. Do I sound like a robot? Or like, no, I just didn't think I'd get like a real person. And for me, coming into this from like a tech background where there's so much emphasis on like customer support and account management, I realized that that was a big hole in the industry, in the syndication world, is investor relation, not only like getting investors through the door, but then communicating, keeping them happy and answering their questions. We have a few other members on my team who are solely dedicated to answering emails that come in from current investors, making sure they have access to their portal, their tax statements, the dividends, they can see everything, kind of that transparency. And I think syndicators who started in 2012 have had to adapt to like all the new technology that's come out, because now the upcoming wave of new passive investors, they want to see, they know that they can have that transparency. And so they're going to want it. That's something that we've realized and we've invested heavily in on our end, is that not only communication, but like transparency, because technology allows for it these days.
It sounds so trivial what we're talking about, like communication, a portal, transparency, because what we're really talking about is, hey, I want you to make money for me, so I don't care if you talk to me at all. That was my initial attitude. And that is completely the wrong way to look at it, because, yeah, I like to make money, but I want to know that my capital is in a good place. And having someone who communicates is critical, because there's a couple of syndicators out there who give, they have great results, but takes them forever to answer an email. Where's my K-1? I don't know. It's April 14th. They still haven't sent it. And it's just not worth it. I can go somewhere else and maybe the returns are slightly less, but the return on my stress is non-existent. So it's really a bunch of different things, but you want to find people that you're comfortable doing business with. And I know that's a cliche, but it really makes a difference. And that's why meeting people in person, going to events and things like that is a huge benefit, because then you're able to do the transaction a lot more smoothly.
And when you talk about that, the one question when people ask me like what to look for in syndicators, because again, we've syndicated deals and also I'm an investor, so I see both sides of it. And first question I always tell them is, if you're getting to talk to them, say, send me a copy of the last statement or investor summary update that you sent your investors and just cross off the name. show me the statement that shows like somebody invested in what do they see and so forth. And if they can't send you a statement, then that should be a red flag of how are they reporting? And that's usually the first sign, because I think where a lot of people, like you mentioned, they do the marketing and they're good at getting that money in the door, but they're not good at managing the funds, the ones that get in trouble. And they can't provide you that information because they do what I always call bucket accounting. Money comes in, great. They put it out the door. But every time they're just taking that money and just putting it out the door without recognizing like they're allocating it or classifying it to realize how much do we really have?
Yeah. And it's critical to analyze all those things, right? You should be asking for those documents every time you're with a new sponsor. Send me a copy of past deals, the pitch decks, all that stuff, including investor communications. I mean, we ask for that because some of them send three sentences and maybe that's enough, but maybe you're someone who wants more. And some people send the entire financials every month. And me personally, I'm not going to look at the entire financials. I'm going to trust that the sponsor I picked has it handled, but I might dip into them once a year or something just to check things out. But there's different levels of comfort for different people, but you have to match yourself up with a sponsor who's going to satisfy your communication needs. Otherwise, you're going to be incredibly frustrated during the hold time of the asset.
No, I just think this is interesting because we recently, maybe a few episodes ago, did two episodes just on questions you should ask every sponsor and questions every sponsor should be prepared to answer, because I don't know. I just think that people don't know. Syndications is kind of, like you said, not new, but newer in the past decade. I think people are just starting to kind of realize and come around to it. How long has Left Field Investors been around?
We've been around 2 years. We started, we were going to be a dinner club in Columbus, Ohio, where I live, 12 people once a month meeting, talking about investing. And our first meeting was going to be March 18th, 2020.
Oh my gosh. Literally, you're the third person that we've had on the podcast. And I have my own story similar to this, that I feel like March 2020 was people were launching things, doing things, and then we're all shut down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now we have over 1,200 members. So it worked out. It was not intentional. And the reason that we kind of developed into this community is because the 12 of us got together on Zoom calls and we started, how do we make ourselves better? And we came up with like a checklist for questions to ask a sponsor. And so on our website for our members group, there's what questions to ask. We have Deal Analyzer to help you analyze the deal and make sure all the metrics fit the parameters that you like. And so we just slowly developed these tools. And then we're like, well, I guess we got to get a website to put it on. And nothing we did was really intentional, but we've grown this group into a place that you can go to learn about passive investing. Not only that, but there's a network of people. Like, people are getting together in different parts of the country. There's a group that meets in Boston of Left Field Investors that meet in person periodically, just because they all met through our online meeting. So I think all of these tools that you need to be a quality investor, you can get through your community if you're part of a community. And that's why I think community is so important.
That's awesome. Well, way to pivot with the times and everything that was thrown at you. That's pretty great. You've grown substantially in the last 2 years.
12 to 1,200. Yeah, that's some pretty decent growth.
No big deal. No big deal. Do you have monthly meetings or webinars, or when people are interested and they might have a deal, do they come to you? Does that syndicator or sponsor come and speak? What's involved with being part of Left Field Investors?
There's one big umbrella group, Left Field Investors. Then there's a paid membership group for people who really want to dig in deeper. But most of the stuff that we have is available to the free audience. And we do a monthly meeting, fourth Monday of every month, I'll say. We always have a monthly meeting. Once every 2 weeks, we do a lunch and learn, which is just at lunchtime, somebody coming on and talking about an asset class or an investing strategy. We also do deal webinars where if the sponsor that we know, like, and trust, we'll give better terms to our investors. If we hit a certain threshold, then we will allow them to present the deal to our group. And that's how sometimes our group will get better terms that way. And then we try to network. We do some different networking things so people can get to know each other. And then our membership group's called the Infield, and we do some special meetings with them. Everything's baseball themed, even though we're not really baseball fans. So
I was going to ask, are you a big baseball fan, or how did that come about?
When I was a financial advisor, my colleagues would always look at me like, when I start talking alternative investments, they'd look at me like, oh, you're way out there in left field. And so that's how we got our name. So everything we do is baseball themed, but everything we try to do is educational and networking in our group. And we record all of our meetings. So if someone's interested in kind of just checking us out, they can go to our website and look at the recorded meetings. And I tell people, you got to find a community that the culture of that community fits your personality. And as I said before, it doesn't have to be Left Field Investors. I'm biased. I think our group is great, but others might be more comfortable in a different group. And many of us, myself included, are in multiple groups. I just think the power of a community and what it can provide you especially with respect to something you're not going to hear it advertised on the radio or on the TV. You're not going to hear people talking about syndications like they do the stock market. So you need a community to go to educate yourself. That's what we try to provide.
Yeah, no, that's so true. The point about not hearing about these syndications on radio, TV ads or whatever. We actually just launched a Regulation A offering, which does allow for marketing. And it is interesting because yes, we can market, but we're having to also educate on how does this work? A lot of people are like, is this a REIT? So, I mean, we just hosted a webinar earlier today, which again, about that, like, here's an introduction to how this works. Here's an introduction to how the fund works, how it's structured, because it's not really talked about. So talk about like trying to break through into a community, like advertising for something that people don't understand what it is in general, even if it sounds great. They're like, wait, is this real? Are you sure you can do this?
That also speaks to the power of community on both sides. And that's why sponsors and operators are interested in us, because you can come to Left Field Investors and do a lunch and learn or some kind of presentation, and you know you're getting an audience that already at least knows what a syndication is and has some basic knowledge. And so that you know you're preaching to people that are listening and understanding, which we always want new people in there too. So I admire you for reaching out to people that wouldn't otherwise get this. But also, it's nice to go to a place where you don't have to explain syndication right out of the gates.
For sure. I mean, I speak with people all across the spectrum, people who are asking me, is a mortgage note? How does this work? If I give you my money, what's the return? I'm really walking through every aspect of the deal versus people who come, they know exactly what a syndication is. And they're like, okay, I'm looking at 300 grand. Those are very different conversations. I think technology, again, has allowed us to talk about what it is, how we operate, and really get that out there.
Again, a lot of questions because our minimum is only $500. And we provide an 8% pref. So we get questions of, well, is it guaranteed? Well, it's an investment. No, we're not a bank, so we don't FDIC insure it. Yeah. And the other component is to that, some people think 8% monthly. And I'm like, I wish.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like, can you tell me where you're finding 8% monthly? I will give you my money. Yeah, I think you said it earlier, and it's definitely a mindset thing and why I brought up that snowball effect. You said, yeah, you know, split 10 ways, that's only $33 a person. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much our minimum. Our minimum, you're only getting $3 a month. But it's that starting out, it's getting comfortable. And we've had a lot of investors who have come and been like, okay, their market research is kind of what you did. And you started like, here's some money, here's some money. They'll give us a smaller check, make sure that they're getting the communication they want. The return is actually real. It's not a scam. I hear that a lot. And then they're like, oh, okay. After a few months, they're like, this makes sense. Mm-hmm. I like these people, and they'll put in more. But it is interesting because a lot of people, they're like, wait, that's only $50 a month. And I'm like, yeah, but you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, like, if you put it in your bank account, it's not getting anything. So, yeah.
And if you put it in the stock market, it's $250 the next day.
Yeah.
And you didn't get any cash in your pocket. Yeah. At least you're getting money in your pocket. So
for sure.
Yeah. And I love the entry point that you have there, because I'm sure if I was investing with somebody new that I don't know and wasn't introduced by somebody I know, like, and trust, a $50,000 investment is difficult. But if you're $500 and I can just throw it in there and 3 months later, I'll know whether you guys are legit or not, then I can put in my $50,000. I mean, that's the whole new ballgame, right? I really like that approach because it doesn't require this huge amount of trust right out of the gates. You can kind of test it out. That's a really nice way to do it.
Having it available to non-accredited and accredited, if you started at the 25 or 50 for non-accredited, you're basically, why bother getting non-accredited? Because we went from a pool of essentially, call it 200 million Americans over the age of 18 or whatever it is, down to a much smaller pool once you have that target range. And also that we find the fact that there's a lot of investors that have an extra $2,500 sitting in their IRA that I can't do anything with. You don't want it in the market. Here's a real estate deal that you could get involved in, that you can get interested in and get that money working for you versus having it sit in your custodian's account.
Yeah, no, that's a great approach. I love it.
Something you had mentioned earlier when you were talking about your journey to where you are today was being saved by the market. Would you agree that, and you guys both touched on this earlier, The timing of everything is really important. What would have happened if the market hadn't saved you? Like, would that have changed where you are today?
That's a great question, because you have to go on your journey to get where you're going, obviously, right? Communities like ours might offer some shortcuts so people don't have to go the route I did. If you're just now getting into your first single family home turnkey, you might want to pivot and look into the syndication stuff a little bit more. So I'm glad for my journey. We're trying to maybe shortcut other people's journeys. But if everything would have tanked, I probably would have been done with real estate. And maybe I'm still a financial advisor and speculating in paper assets, which is what I call the stock market, instead of investing in real assets. So I think I was very fortunate to get into real estate at a time when things were going up, 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 so I could realize the value of it. And now where things are uncertain, this is where I'm not just going to stop investing because things are uncertain. I'm much more cautious. I might evaluate things better and have different strategies, but I feel like I still want a dollar cost average into whatever's coming, because as soon as you stop investing, what are you doing? You're losing to inflation. So I think you just have to be more careful. I did kind of luck out entering the pool when the waves were big.
Yeah.
Do you invest in other asset classes besides real estate with syndications? People invest in other companies, venture capital, cryptocurrencies, or is it strictly just real estate?
Mostly real estate. And we cover all the asset classes that you can think of, from multifamily to Bitcoin mining to self-storage, mobile homes, triple net lease notes, all that stuff. And then outside of real estate, there's some people in our community who are interested in crypto. So we have a little membership group. Then we usually think about 5-10% putting it into the fun stuff. 95% of what I do is boring. It's going to return money. Hopefully it's just investing in boring old real estate or notes or whatever. And then to have fun, we go and 5-10% on pre-IPOs, just interesting small company. There's a bunch of different crowdfunding websites now that you can go to that have these companies you can invest in for $500 or $5,000. And you're probably going to lose 9 out of 10 times. But if you hit that one, then it's exciting and it's fun. And you do need a little bit of risk in your portfolio. And so that's where I go to get that.
One place I'll mention to you, like you mentioned, a crowdfunding site. So for our fund, we had to go through a broker dealer, and ours is called a company called Dalmore Financial. And actually on their website, because ours is a Regulation A offering, they do a lot of broker dealers for these, and they've got the whole gamut of a lot of Regulation A. It's really like a pre-IPO. So there's a lot on there as well. I'd say the benefits to some of those is they're not having to pay all the fees to the crowdfunding sites. So they can A, raise more money. I know they definitely spend a lot more money up front, because I know what it costs to do a Regulation A, and it's a lot more than crowdfunding. So they might have a little more money back to them. But there was one on there called like Miso Robotics, where it's like the machines that flip hamburgers. They've got Boxable, which is that modular home company that folds. So it's interesting that I found, because again, I like to play a little bit with a little bit of my money and stuff like that. I didn't realize I was looking into crowdfunding sites. And then I realized, oh, these other broker dealers that do this type of stuff, you can go off their websites and then realize the sponsor's not paying as many fees to the crowdfunding sites because they're hosting it all on like with their own platform and stuff, which just something to mention.
That's great to know, because I did invest in Boxable. I think that's a great one, but I did it through, I forget which one, but one of the crowdfunding. Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah, because those are just so easy. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Republic, but I try not to go on that website because the minimums are so small. It's like $200. And I see three companies, I'm like, oh, that one, because it's just small minimums and it's fun. It's not fun really investing in a multifamily deal, because it's just like, okay, another apartment. That's where I make my money. If I have 10 minutes of free time and I want to have some fun, I go to Republic or Start Engine or something like that and invest in a couple of small companies, because it's just entertaining and one of them will hit, hopefully.
There's another website, 70 Investments as well, you could go to and hit as well. Just FYI.
There you go. That might be my next one.
That was such a softball right there. I had to take advantage of that one. I'm doing your job for you, Lauren.
No, I'm not that in your face.
I am.
So for people who are listening that maybe are starting to realize they do want to do more passive investing, how do they get in touch with Left Field Investors and give your pitch?
Sure. Yeah. Again, I don't do the hard sell either. I'm not a financial advisor anymore. But yeah, if people are interested, they can go to our website, leftfieldinvestors.com. There's a subscribe button in the top right if you want to get our newsletter, which has information about all of our meetings, deals, everything that comes up. I talk to 3 or 4 investors a day. Feel free to send me an email, jim@leftfieldinvestors.com. Or there's like a contact us button on the website. All that stuff comes to me and I'm happy to schedule a call and chat with anybody about passive investing. It's a passion of mine. And what I want to do is allow regular people to get into this so that they can build wealth for their families. And our goal is financial freedom, which means different things to different people. But really what it does is it makes a W-2 job optional if you have multiple income streams and you can build it up. It does take time, but the younger you start, the sooner you'll get there. So I just encourage people, find a community and use that community to make yourself a better investor and build yourself towards financial freedom.
I was going to ask what your one piece of advice would be, but you just gave it. So there you go. Actionable tip.
Nice.
Find the community. One last question. You talk a lot about speculating versus investing. Can you define those and how do you make the leap from one to the other? What's the biggest push?
For people? The speculation to me is like investing in the stock market, right? You're investing in a paper asset. You buy a piece of paper, you hold it with no current benefit or very little current benefit, right? You just hold this piece of paper, this electronic, whatever, ones and zeros, and you're holding it, hoping that eventually you can sell it to someone else for more than you paid for it. Hope is not a strategy, but that's what you're doing. Where investing is where you put money into something, real estate in this example, you get a current benefit in the form of some kind of cash flow, and the appreciation, the part you're hoping for, comes on the back end. I'm not counting on appreciation. I'm hoping for it and expecting it, but I'm getting a current benefit. To me, that's the difference between speculating and investing. And there is a place for speculation. We just talked about pre-IPOs and all that stuff. I speculate all the time. But when I want to make money in a clear and consistent way, that's when I invest. And I invest in real assets that produce cash flow. So how do you get from one to the other? Just to close it all up, you find a community of people that can help you learn how to invest in syndication. So you go to Left Field Investors or you go to 7e.com and invest in those deals. That's what I would do.
Oh, look at you. Look at that. We brought someone on our podcast who pitched us for us.
Exactly.
Jeez. You're welcome back anytime. Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. Chris, do you have any final thoughts?
No, this was a great episode. And again, I love providing people available places to go learn about other syndications and other ways to invest in just the amount of information that's out there and giving people a place that they can go find it, because there is so much. Sometimes you can get lost in the shuffle of it, but a group of 1,200 plus individuals where it's not a pressure of getting pitched all the time. It's, hey, going to educate, learn, and understand where to invest, because I hate hearing the horror stories where people, I invested in this deal and the money's gone. I actually had someone on BiggerPockets literally just reach out to me to call it a crowdfunding / group that raised money to invest in land deals. And now that sponsor from several years ago is basically offering people 25 cents on the dollar for everything. Oh. And I just hear that and it's just like, oh, I feel for them. So,
well, that being said, if you're interested in Left Field Investors, like Jim said, you can go to their website or email him if you have any questions at jim@leftfieldinvestors.com. Thank you, everybody, for joining this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave us a review. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.